Nuketown Radioactive number 65 for Wednesday, April 23rd, 2008. In this episode of Nuketown Radioactive, Jordan loses her first tooth but finds Narnia. Baseball season gets underway as I discover the wonders of DVRing games and having a new AAA baseball team in the Lehigh Valley. Nuketown's comment section explodes with conversation. Gaming advocacy gets a new voice in the Escapist cast, and I check out a new podcast dedicated to the Mets. Welcome to Nuketown Radioactive. I am your host, Ken Newquist, and this is the occasional podcast about life, liberty, and the pursuit of geekdom. And the big news around Nuketown this week is that Jordan lost her first tooth, which is pretty cool. You know, she turned five, and then shortly thereafter, she lost a tooth. Unfortunately, she also swallowed her first tooth. We were having dinner when she lost it, so we weren't able to lay the tooth out for the tooth fairy. But fortunately, the tooth fairy, knowing all and seeing all with regards to teeth, was okay with that and still gave her her little present. So that was pretty cool. It was it was something we had been anticipating for a while because Jordy had been wiggling the tooth and was very excited that her tooth was loose. And just as fate would have it, she happened to swallow the first tooth. So, you know, unfortunately, that's how it goes. I look at it as being pretty much a learning experience for her. So she has lots of baby teeth left, and I am sure that next time around she will take more care to avoid swallowing swallowing her tooth. Now, in other Jordan news, we've started reading The Magician's Nephew because, well, let me back up for a second. We watched Chronicles of Narnia, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, and after watching that film, she decided that she wanted to read the books. So we're starting with the first one, which is The Magician's Nephew, which is actually a prequel, having been written sixth in the series, but we're going to go chronologically in terms of the story of the Chronicles of Narnia. And this is basically telling how the doorway to Narnia was opened in the first place. Now, this is actually working out really well because Jordy, well, as we talked about in the last podcast, can get a little bit scared of things. A little bit more so, I think, than maybe other kids her age. Well, I shouldn't say that. I'm sure there's plenty of kids who get scared like Jordy does, but she's a little bit sensitive to these kinds of things. So as I'm reading The Magician's Nephew, the actual magician, who is the uncle of one of the main characters, isn't a nice guy. He's not necessarily actively evil, but he is more than willing to use children as guinea pigs to find out where magical items will take them. So he's definitely a little bit creepy. And fortunately, there haven't been any real side effects to this. Jordy has been listening to the book, hasn't had any nightmares, hasn't really been freaked out by the imagery of this kind of mean uncle character. So I'm going to chalk that up as a good sign. We're only, I think, about three chapters into the book. The kids are just now venturing into what we suppose is Narnia. They've just disappeared, so we don't know that they're actually there yet, but I think we're going to go out on a limb and suppose that the kids are in Narnia. So that's been a lot of fun. It's great to actually be jumping into a book, which isn't to say we haven't been reading books, but we haven't been reading a lot of really meaty books, you know, stories that are ongoing beyond A Walk It in My Pocket or, you know, The Cat in the Hat or any of the other children's books. Those are all pretty self-contained. This is actually an ongoing story. So we had been reading Little House on the Prairie, and I think we read Little House in the Big Woods to start things off, but that's really more Sue and Jordan's thing. I think they're the ones who are going to go through Little House on the Prairie. It's pretty cool that Jordy and I are now going to be able to read Chronicles of Narnia. I've never read the books before, so I'm looking forward to reading them. And I think it's just nice to, you know, have that father-daughter bonding experience while we're reading her first fantasy books. You know, that's just pretty cool. And, you know, the other thing that I find interesting about it, or I don't know if interesting is the right word, but that I find exciting about it is, you know, I never got to really read fantasy when I was a little kid. I read the Wind in the Willows books, I think, a lot when I was Geordie's age, Frog and Toad, that kind of stuff. But my parents really weren't reading me fantasy and science fiction at that point. I was pretty much obsessed with Star Wars from about 5 and a half on. But, you know, it wasn't something that I actually read about until much later in elementary school. And, geez, I don't think I got into fantasy until I read The Hobbit in, like, probably fifth grade or something. So it's cool to be able to sit down and read this book now when she's five and to see the kind of wonder in her eyes as we're reading Narnia. And just, you know, you can see her getting really excited about the concept of Narnia, this magic land that you can get to by stepping into a wardrobe. Now, we do have some questions about fantasy and reality. And I do, you know, she has asked me, well, is Narnia real? And of course, then we talk about, well, no, it's a pretend place, but we can have fun pretending that it's real, right? So that was pretty cool. And I think, you know, this is going to be a pretty good setup for us to be able to move on to some other books like The Hobbit, like Harry Potter. I think those would probably be our next two series. One book that I would absolutely love to read to her someday is Watership Down, which is one of my absolute favorite books by Richard Adams. But, you know, it turns out that Watership Down actually freaks a lot of kids out. if you're in your 30s, then you may be familiar with it. This is the book about bunnies, bunnies that fight each other. It's actually this fairly epic tale in which you have this warren of rabbits who are pretty much content to be living about their bunny lives when one of the rabbits has this... well, I guess you could say prophetic dream that the warren will be destroyed. So he manages to convince his brother and a bunch of other younger rabbits to leave the warren before it is destroyed. And then they go on this kind of epic quest. And like the Iliad, or actually I guess a better analogy would be the Odyssey, they go to strange lands, they encounter other strange animals, and it's told entirely from the perspective of the rabbits, and it's really done well. I mean, if you haven't read the book, I would definitely recommend checking it out. And if you haven't read it in a while, it's probably worth, it's definitely worth revisiting. But having said that, although I loved this book from the time I was like, I want to say like fifth or sixth grade on, probably fifth, you know, it does scare a little kid. So I don't think we'll be reading that anytime soon, but it is on my list of books that I'd love Geordie to read at some point, because I really do think that it is a good book. So spring is now in full force, and the good news there is that everybody is able to go outside. Luke and Jordan can play out in the yard almost all day. Sue can get out there and dig in the dirt and plant her garden and generally do whatever she wants in the backyard. And it's just so very nice because people were really kind of getting cooped up around here, and they really, really wanted to get outside. And I gotta say, everybody is far happier when they can go out and play all day in the mud or the dirt or whatever than being cooped up inside as they were for, well, most of the winter, or the kind of quasi-winter we had here in Easton, where we didn't get a lot of snow, but it was either cold or so ridiculously muddy that they couldn't play in the backyard. So spring is here. The other good thing about that is that baseball is back. As I've talked about on the podcast previously, I've been kind of an ever-increasing arc of baseball fandom over the last couple of years. I think it probably started in the late 90s when the Mets made a couple of good pennant runs and had the World Series with the Yankees. And for some reason, I mean, it's just appealed to me more and more as I've gotten older. And I think, as I've talked about in previous podcasts, the thing that appeals to me about it, well, there's a couple things that appeal to me about it, but one of the big things is I'm able to just kind of like sit on the sofa with the kids, watch a game. You know, baseball games are generally not scary. So, you know, it's kind of this nice recreational activity that we can do with the kids. And I just becoming increasingly fascinated with just the art and science of the game, how everything's scored, how the game is played, you know, the kind of deep mechanics of the whole thing. But anyway, I am a Mets fan, and what I'm able to do now, which is another reason why I guess I'm getting more into baseball, is I can use the digital video recorder that we got to watch games. Now, this means that I'm actually going to be able to see more games, because one thing, I can program the DVR to record the Mets whenever they're on. The other thing that I can do is start recording a game, say, at 7 o'clock, put the kids to bed, you know, do the whole bedtime ritual, right? So brushing the teeth, giving baths, reading books, you know, giving snacks, whatever. And then I can start the game at 8:30, whatever. Now, the downside to this, as I've discovered, this season is extra innings. The Mets games, for whatever reason, have tended to go long when I've been watching them. And it turns out that 4 hours will only get you to about the top of the 12th, but not the bottom of the 12th. And that can be, you know, a little bit frustrating when you're watching the game at around 1 o'clock in the morning and all of a sudden the DVR runs out. But, you know, I just needed to start padding the games with a little bit more time, I guess. Now, feeding into my baseball frenzy, or perhaps because of my baseball frenzy, I am going to a couple of different baseball parks this summer, which is just really, really fun. I went to see the Oakland A's when I was out in San Francisco for a business trip last month, and although the Coliseum is not the prettiest stadium in the world, it actually is kind of just a really big concrete bowl, and to be honest, it's kind of ugly. But it was great to be at a game there because we were able to get these awesome seats for like $35, 25 rows behind home plate. I mean, there's foul balls flying over our heads. It was the A's versus the Indians, so it wasn't either team that I was particularly interested in. But it was still cool to just be at a game and, you know, having a beer on a beautiful day in Oakland and just soaking in the sun and watching people play baseball. It was just... Well, it was really cool. And since my last previous Major League Baseball experience was to go to Shea Stadium, where I had seats 4 rows from the top of the stadium, so the players looked like teeny tiny little ants far away, and that was 20-odd years ago, it was nice to be at a game where you could almost feel like you could reach out and touch the players, so that was cool. That has kind of inspired, well, actually, I guess we were planning on doing this beforehand, but some friends of mine from work are going to be going to Shea Stadium this summer because it's the last season for Shea. They're going to be tearing it down and moving to their new stadium called, I think it's City Park, CITI Stadium, next year, which is right next door to Shea. But this is the last season for Shea, and we paid a little bit extra to get some fairly decent seats. I mean, they're not spectacular seats, but they should be pretty good. And we're going to go for a night game, which I've never been to a night baseball game. And it's going to be, let's see, July 9th. So if anyone's going to be at Shea on July 9th, let me know. I'm really, really looking forward to it. I think it's going to be just a complete blast. And it has me thinking about, well, let's see, what other baseball games could I go to this summer? I'm thinking maybe I could go to a Mets game down in Philadelphia and see them play the Phillies. I'm also wondering if maybe it would be worth it to go to Baltimore to Camden Yards and see the Yankees play the Orioles down there. You know, I've gotten to the point where I've started to connive and seem and wonder, well, gee, let's see, how can I get to see a couple of other Major League Baseball teams this summer? So, all in all, baseball is, well, as you can tell, I've just been kind of geeking out about it quite a lot. The other thing that's big as far as baseball goes is that we in the Lehigh Valley now have an Iron Pigs AAA Phillies affiliate, which is playing in Allentown, and I hope to catch a game there. At least one game. I want to use it as a prelude to taking Jordan to Shea Stadium to see the Mets. Jordan really wants to go to see a baseball game at Shea. But I don't want to take her to Shea and spend all the money to go to Shea if she's just going to get bored around the third inning. So our thought was we could go to see the Iron Pigs play. If she's able to make it through all 9 innings and she's still really interested in it, then we can start thinking about maybe going to Shea in August or September. But like I say, there's no point in going to a Major League Baseball game and spending all that money if she's just going to get there and want to leave. So that's the good news. The bad news is that, well, the Iron Pigs aren't so good. I think their record is presently 2-18, which I've had some friends go to the Iron Pigs games, and basically they kind of look like the Bad News Bears on the field. And that's really surprising considering they're a AAA affiliate. I mean, they're one step away from the show. These players should be, significantly better than they are. And I guess, you know, that doesn't bode well for the Phillies. But hey, that's why I'm a Mets fan, right? So enough rambling on about baseball. I want to now ramble on about, well, Nuketown. Because, wow, the new comment system is just doing a great job. I think I talked about this in the last podcast, if not the last one, then the previous one to that. And basically, the new system is this. You don't need to log in anymore if you want to submit a comment. You can just go to the site, save the post for Nuketown Radioactive number 65, and you can just fill out a form. It submits the comment. It goes into a queue. I review the queue, and then I publish whatever's not spam. And my anti-spam filters are really good. They've catched all the spam that's been submitted so far. We haven't had any false positives in that. We haven't had any comments been flagged as spam that weren't spam. So I'm actually getting to the point now where I may just allow comments to be posted directly to the site and just, you know, go back after the fact and look at the notifications, because the system's really just been that good. The upside to all this is that, wow, I got a lot of comments on Nuketown. I don't think it would be an exaggeration to say that there have probably been 50 comments in the last 2 weeks. Hell, there may have actually been 75 comments in the last 2 weeks. And all of those comments are probably more than I had in the previous 6 months. Hell, I'll go so far as to say in the previous year. You know, because the old system required you to log in, you had to remember your username, you had to remember your password. Now, if you want to use your username and password, well, okay, that's great. You know, it'll do things like sign your posts for you, and it's kind of simplifies the whole process of filling out the form. But the form is not so complicated as to really be a barrier to posting. I've got discussion threads on Nuketown now that have, you know, 5, 6, 9, 10 comments to them. And man, I can't think of anything over the last year that had, you know, 9, 10 comments on it. So the system is working really, really well. And we've been having some pretty good conversations about things like Dungeons and Dragons, comic books, parenting, all that kind of stuff. So come to the site at nuketown.com and give us your 2 cents. Now, one of the things that it did spawn as far as comments go was a conversation about Star Wars in the last episode of Radioactive. I was talking about wanting to see, you know, what people thought about when I should watch Star Wars with Jordan. And that kind of spawned a conversation about, well, which is scarier? Is Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone scarier than Harry Potter and... Wait, no. Is Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone scarier than Star Wars and New Hope? And the kind of sense was, Steve from the WikiGood podcast posted a comment, and then my friend Lance posted some comments, and the sense was, well, you know, it seems like Harry Potter would be the scarier of the two movies, but I submit to you that you may want to watch Star Wars again, because there are some pretty scary scenes in there. For example, when Darth Vader first appears on the Rebel blockade runner, when he's interrogating Princess Leia and she nearly gets tortured. There's a scene where she just kind of, like, you know, all of that happens off scene, but it's still pretty scary when the whole, you know, interrogation droid things comes floating closer. We have the sad fate of Luke's aunt and uncle, which is revealed in a smoldering close-up on scene. So I think upon second watching of Star Wars, with an eye towards, well, is this going to scare the crap out of my daughter? You're gonna see stuff that you don't necessarily see when you're just watching it for, you know, being a 30-something or 20-something geek that you are. Now, I will say that, you know, Harry Potter definitely has its scary moments to it, and I think that there is the very accurate point that Harry Potter tends to have more scary atmosphere to it. There are areas where there's kind of like this dread, and I can see that she's going to have, you know, some issues with the encounters with Voldemort, but I think the overall scariness of the first Harry Potter movie is lower than the first Star Wars movie. Now, from there, things diverge quickly. From the Chamber of Secrets and all of the other Harry Potter movies, I think they're going to win hands down on the whole scary thing. Geordi would not make it past the spiders in Chamber of Secrets. But I think in terms of the next kind of fantasy movie that we watch, I really think that she can deal with Harry Potter. And I don't know. I think we're going to kind of stick with the plan and go with Harry Potter. And if she likes that, then maybe, just maybe, Star Wars.
Fit all the gaming podcasts you possibly can inside your head with RPGpodcasts.com.
So the first thing I want to talk about in Netheads this week is the Escapist Cast. The Escapist Cast is a bi-weekly podcast that focuses on role-playing game advocacy, exploring the myths and misconceptions of role-playing games, improving public opinion of role-playing games, promoting them as educational and social tools, and generally, you know, just promoting the hobby for future generations of gamers. This is a spin-off of the very long-running Escapist website, or the Escapist website. There's the Escapist magazine, which is actually a magazine about gaming. And then there's The Escapist, which is this advocacy site that's been around for a while. It's a really good site. It's got a lot of references and resources on it for defensive role-playing games. I've relied on it a couple of times when I've written columns for Nuketown. And I think, you know, when I first heard about The Escapist, you know, the reasons why I would go to it was pretty much a defensive kind of maneuver. There's a lot of people who have a negative opinion about Dungeons and Dragons and role-playing games who perhaps think they're satanic, who perhaps think that they're promoting paganism or are encouraging gamers to commit suicide when their character dies. You know, there's all these myths that surround role-playing games, and to my experience, not a single one of them is true. But there's still these misconceptions out there. So first and foremost, The Escapist has been a resource for people, you know, to kind of debunk these myths and have some frequently asked questions and get the real facts out there. So The Escapist cast is certainly continuing that aspect of it. But I think another really good thing about The Escapist cast is that they're talking about, you know, ways to really promote the hobby. We're, you know, here in the late aughts of the 21st century, and role-playing is definitely not, you know, as popular as it was, say, in the late 70s or early 80s when, you know, it was very much of a mainstream phenomenon. So if we want to keep gaming, well, we need to keep getting gamers, and we need to keep people interested in the game, and, you know, we need to do what we can to train a new generation of gamers. So The Escapist cast is about all these things, and I think it's definitely filling a niche within the gaming podosphere, and it's really got me thinking about, well, you know, how I would introduce role-playing to my kids, maybe volunteering at the local convention to help coordinate with, like, a kids track of some kind. And, you know, generally just seeing how we can get the hobby out there a bit more. Because it's not just D&D. There's a lot of cool things that are out there. And I think that all of the skills that role-playing games encourage, creative thinking, collaborative storytelling, working and playing well with others, are all skills that, you know, you really end up using in the real world. And it's been just incredibly valuable for me to be able to game over the last 20 years. And, you know, it's something I'd like to see more people doing. So you can check out The Escapist cast by going to theescapistcast.blogspot.com. And of course, a link will be in the show notes. Now, getting back to baseball for a bit, there's two baseball sides I wanted to talk about. Both are kind of specific to my own interests, but, you know, the thing I guess I want to point out is if you're into baseball, there are actually blogs and podcasts about baseball, especially the larger teams, or the more popular teams, I should say. I think as geeks, it's easy to think of podcasts and blogs and such as being a very geeky phenomenon. But the nice thing is that while we haven't necessarily achieved mainstream penetration with these particular technologies, it is nice to know that it's diversified amongst other topics. So it's not just about technology and games and such like that, but that it's actually expanding into new areas like sports or like knitting or whatever. So I guess my point is that if you're into baseball, or hell, if you're into anything, you should go out there and see what exists for your particular hobbies, because I'm willing to bet that there's a podcast or blog dedicated to it. So back to baseball. I've been looking to see if there are any podcasts for the Mets, and while there are a couple out there, the one that seems to be the most current and the most up-to-date is the New York Mets cast. It's a twice-a-week podcast dedicated to the Mets. It has news and commentary. They dissect games in detail, analyzing specific players, trends in the game, etc. And episodes run about 20 to 30 minutes, which is nice because I prefer the shorter podcasts. You can check it out at www.nymetscast.com. Now, the other thing is there is a blog for the Iron Pigs. It's called the Original Iron Pigs Blog. And while I haven't been to a game yet, I have been trying to keep up with the team. I don't actually subscribe to our local newspapers anymore on a daily basis, just because Sue and I haven't had a chance to really keep up with reading what's going on. But we do subscribe to the websites and get, you know, news announcements and stuff like that. But they don't necessarily go into the kind of detail that I'm looking for the Iron Pigs. So by going to the Iron Pigs blog at ironpigs.blogspot.com, I can keep up up with summaries of the team's home and away games. They've got some player profiles. They've got news about call-ups to the Phillies and notes about other team happening. So it's just a kind of good way to keep up with this AAA affiliate.
Chris, you've got the seven sun plants, but you don't have me. You were going to kill me, Chris. You were going to have to come down here. You're going to have to come down here.
I've done far worse than kill you. I've hurt you, and I wish to go on hurting you. I shall leave you as you left me, cliffhangered, marooned for all eternity in the center of a waterlogged, forgotten lab. Buried alive. Buried alive.
Chris!
The secret lair. The final... Oh, come on. You cannot be serious. No, I am not reading that. And what is this? These are the voyages of 230-something Midwestern geeks? Forget it. I'll say subscribe at www.thesecretlair.com, and that's it. I'm done.
So that all about do it for this episode of Nuketown Radioactive. No review this week since I've spent about half the podcast talking about baseball. But what can I say, guys? I'm just geeking out. It's spring. It's baseball season. I'm going to go see the Mets at Shea. That's freaking awesome. But anyway, I want comments on the podcast. You can send them to me at nuketown@gmail.com. You can also reach me on Skype. My username is Nuketown. I have links to my Facebook profile on the actual website at nuketown.com. You can find me on Twitter at www.twitter.com/nukehavoc. And I have an account on Goodreads, also available through Nuketown. So that'll be about it. I'm looking forward to talking with you all soon. My goal for April is to get out 3 shows this month, and I already have the show notes written for Radioactive number 66, so it may actually happen.